takes a shot, runs into the box, shot, score!
It's time for Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
Tune in as Jason Longshore gives you insight and analysis on the beautiful game, including headlines from around the world of soccer.
Rebound, score!
This is Atlanta Soccer Tonight, brought to you by your local Ford dealer and U.S. Soccer and the She Believes Cup in Atlanta on April 6th. And Firehouse Subs, enjoy more subs, save more lives.
Atlanta Soccer Tonight is on Sports Radio 92.9, The Game. Here's Jason Longshore.
Let's kick it. Atlanta Soccer Tonight, live on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. I'm Jason Longshore. Welcome to our weekly show where we cover soccer in Atlanta, in the state of Georgia, all over the Southeast, all over the United States, all over the planet. That's what we do on AST each and every week here on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. We're also on the Off the Woodwork podcast. Wherever you get your podcast, make sure you are subscribed. A lot of Atlanta United talk tonight. There are matches to talk about. There are previews to talk about. There are rumors to talk about. There is sound to play. Lots of different things to get into across the Atlanta United side of things, and we'll dig into all of that this evening. Let's start where we last saw the Five Stripes. It was on the road in New Jersey at Red Bull Arena on Saturday night, a pretty crazy match when you're a couple steps removed from it. It felt pretty crazy inside of it as well. Atlanta was good at times. They were really good at times, and then they were not so good at times. All of that added up to a 2-2 draw that, if you had offered it before the game as a fair representation of where this team kind of is at the moment, you probably would have taken it. But the way that it played out is the frustrating element to this one. Atlanta took a late lead, a beautiful goal from Edwin Mosquera, who had just checked into the game. I think his first four touches were on the dribble and then the goal. Perfect angle for Mike Conti and I from our spot almost on the roof of Red Bull Arena, where the broadcast positions are. Some of the best in the league, to be honest. And we were right behind it from Mosquera looking towards the goal. You could see the curl of it. When he hit it, you could see that it's going in. There was no chance for Carlos Cornell to keep it out. And at that point, it's stoppage time. Atlanta's got a 2-1 lead. It's the first time they've ever scored two goals at Red Bull Arena. It's only the third time they've scored at Red Bull Arena ever. They are minutes away from their first win at Red Bull Arena. And then that doesn't happen. A play where I thought live there was a foul on Nealis jumping over the back of Pedro Amador. The ball gets across. Derek Williams fails to clear, ends up in the back of the net, 99th minute, and Red Bulls end up securing the point and getting the 2-2 draw. Watching it back, I still think you can call a foul there, and I think in the 30th minute of that game, foul's probably called. In another part of the field, I think a foul's probably called. It's not called here. It's a judgment call. I've talked about this before here on AST and in Atlanta United pre- and post-game shows. There are very few calls in the sport that are purely black and white from a referee standpoint. And replay helps out with a lot of those. There are very few that are just purely yes or no. This is not one of those. This is a judgment call and how much contact is there, what Amador's doing, what Nealis is doing. In my opinion, you can call the foul because Nealis goes first and he's on top of Amador preventing him from jumping. Yes, Amador's backing into him, trying to clear Nealis out. Nealis jumps over it. But in the way that he jumps over, he doesn't go up to win the header. He goes over on top of Amador. I thought he used his hands to basically climb Amador. I don't think he does. I think he does put his hands out as he's over top of him to brace himself landing on Amador, which can be a foul. It's not called. Probably a 50-50 call in general, maybe sliding the percentages here or there. Like I said, I do think that gets called on other parts of the field, and I do think that gets called earlier in the 90-minute match. It's not called here as the whistle is swallowed in that moment, as we are prone to see at times. Let's hear from Derek Williams, who talked about his part of that. He spoke to the media today after Atlanta United training. Here's Williams talking about that equalizing goal for the Red Bulls.
I hold my hands up for the goal. I said in the dressing room afterwards, just a poor clearance from me. It's just disappointing because, as I said before, these are the last final games and this is where you want your big players to step up and make moments. So disappointed in myself for that. But the only way to rectify that is to have a big performance on Saturday. And I'm not going to feel sorry for myself. I'm just going to try to rectify it, give it 100%, and then, yeah, go from there. I think we're more than capable to get a result there and to get the 3 points. And like I said, if we would have won that 2-1, it would have been perfect away day.
That was Derek Williams from Marietta earlier today at the Children's Healthcare of Atlanta training ground. It would have been the perfect away day. A 2-1 win at Red Bull Arena for the first time in club history would have been a huge result for Atlanta United, but it is not to be. Full credit to Williams for taking the blame, the responsibility there. Yeah, that one's got to get cleared. There's no way around it. We can go back and forth about the possible foul, but that still shouldn't end up in the back of the net. Brad Kazan spoke to the media on hand, which was myself and Doug Robertson at Red Bull Arena. This is Brad talking about just how he felt. I asked him the question, and I'll paraphrase because it was the last question of the night for Kazan. And I asked him if he was okay with the better response than what we had seen in the previous week, the very disappointing loss to Nashville, the good result. I don't know, maybe good might not be the right word there. The result against Miami that had a lot of good in it, that also had 60 minutes of maybe not so good in it too. And then this one, which had more than 30 minutes of good and looked like it was going to be really good, but ends up not being that and being another draw on a night where you really needed 3 points. Here's Brad Kazan talking about how he felt at the end of the night after an amazing performance from Kazan, one of his best that he's ever had in an Atlanta United kit. Here's Brad Kazan from Red Bull Arena.
Yeah, but it's like you said after the Miami game, right? A game is 90 plus minutes. Today was 99 minutes. So if you're playing for 90, you're going to come up short. If you're playing for 97, you're going to come up short. You got to play for 99 minutes. You got to play for as long as the referee doesn't blow his whistle. And so, we talked about, hey, listen, how we finish Miami is how we need to play and do that for the entire game. And I think at times tonight we battled the first half. You know, forget the tactics and the shape and whatnot. We didn't tackle. We didn't win second balls. Those are little moments. Those are details that subconsciously send a message to the opposition saying, damn, we're under it here. Every time there's a second ball, they're picking up the second ball. Well, at the same time, it's sending the same message to us saying every time there's a second ball or every time there's a 50-50 tackle or a 60-40 tackle, we're not winning the tackle. We tackle, you know, like, freaking hell. Yeah, sorry. Getting mad. Oh, yeah. Probably need to bite my tongue. So.
You can hear the frustration in Brad Kazan's voice there at the end. And I can't say I really disagree with him in his comments of what happens in front of him on the field too often with this team in 2024. It's Atlanta Soccer Tonight. I'm Jason Longshore. This is 92.9 The Game. This is also the Odyssey app. It's also the Off the Woodwork podcast if you're listening to this on delay. That was Brad Kazan from Red Bull Arena. And yeah, I think the last part is the one that I want to dig into before we start to look ahead to Philadelphia. And yes, we're going to talk about rumor and innuendo that has flared up as well when it comes to Atlanta United and coaches and things that could be happening down the road. We'll get into that in the next segment. We'll get into Philadelphia in the next segment. I want to sit on the last half of what Brad had to say. He said that you're not tackling, you're not getting stuck into those 50-50 balls, you're not winning the first balls and the second balls and things like that. And he said it's beyond just being one of the little things that you need to do in a game to have success. it sends a message. And the way that I've kind of quantified that throughout the season is those are little moments of momentum, and they're real. Momentum is a real thing in a match. You're not going to find analytics to quantify it. You're not going to find stats to quantify it. But if you've ever played, if you've ever coached, if you've ever lived and died with this sport in the stands, you feel momentum. You know that it's there. You will sometimes feel like your team could play for 4 hours on a night and never score a goal. You will feel a game flip on its head because of little things like Brad's talking about. Somebody flying into a tackle and decking a player at midfield. Somebody going up and winning a header and then pumping their fist afterwards. Sometimes it's a great skill move that changes the momentum. Just like Brad talked about, and I love the way that he put it, and I've honestly never heard a soccer player or any pro athlete talk about it in those ways. It sends a message both ways. If you are the one who's flying into that tackle and putting somebody on their backside and winning the ball, and then maybe pumping your fist, maybe looking down at the guy on the ground, maybe having something to say about it, it sends a message. It sends a message to your team that, hey, we're in this. We're winning these situations. Look at them. We've got them intimidated. We're in the ascendancy here. Sends a message to the opponents as well. Oh man, every time there's a 50-50 ball, I'm going to end up getting decked. Maybe I don't want to go into that 50-50. Maybe I need to make a business decision and back out of that challenge. It's real. It's a real conversation. You can say, it's not that big of a deal. It's a big deal. Go ask Roy Keane if it's a big deal. You ever see him play for Manchester United? Guy held on to grudges for years about people who decked him in a tackle and had something to say about it. And then he ended up ending their career when he got the first chance to do it a few years later. Yeah, that guy was Erling Haaland's dad. That's Roy Keane. Go watch the tackle. You can find it wherever you want to look for it. We don't need that kind of tackle, but you have to send messages, and it is contagious. How many times in Atlanta United history have you seen a great dribbling run lead to other players going off on great dribbling runs and everyone feeds on that? How many times have you been in Mercedes-Benz Stadium when that happens and the crowd starts to roar and you can feel the energy from it? I know you felt it on Wednesday night last week, and maybe that energy started with Lionel Messi checking into the game. But that energy continued going because of Atlanta's play, and especially Alexi Maranchuk's play. And as Rob Valentino talked about, the energy went from excitement about a goat on the field at Mercedes-Benz Stadium to really wanting Atlanta to win that game because they were the better team as the night went on, and they had chances to win it, and they didn't. Momentum, energy, messages, they're all real. And this Atlanta United team has to get better at delivering them. And they're running out of time to do it, because now you go into a game on Saturday night in Philadelphia against a team that won big on Sunday, against a team that is in the final playoff spot, the spot that you're trying to get to, and a team that in their ballpark has had the better of you for a pretty long while. Lately, now Atlanta has turned the games against Philadelphia into good results at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, with the exception of the game this year that maybe turned the season, a 2-0 win for Atlanta that ended up a 2-2 draw because of an inexplicable giveaway, and everything has went downhill since then. Can Atlanta find a way to change that energy, change that momentum, maybe send some messages against a team who really likes to send a lot of messages your way with the way that they play? Can Atlanta United handle that on Sunday? We'll hear a little bit more from Derek Williams talking about how they will handle it. We'll hear from Steon Gregerson as well. And yes, we will talk about the rumors of the day involving one Patrick Vieira. It's Atlanta Soccer Tonight on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. And we'll be right back after this.
When it comes to the world of soccer, we've got you covered.
This is Atlanta Soccer Tonight with Jason Longshore
on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back. It's Atlanta Soccer Tonight, live on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. I'm Jason Longshore. I didn't even get to where I'm doing the show from tonight. I'm at Fifth Third Stadium here in Kennesaw. It was the last match of the season for Atlanta United 2 and MLS Next Pro. A disappointing 1-0 loss on a night where Atlanta outshot Inter Miami 2-3-1, but could not find the back of the net. 6 shots for Miami, 22 for Atlanta. But Atlanta conceded in the first half and could not find an answer. Kind of the story of the 2 season at times, kind of the story of the 1's season. And Atlanta United season really comes to a big potential climax on Saturday. It's not the last game or anything, but it feels like the most important game of the season because of the opponent, the Philadelphia Union, the fact that you're on the road, and the fact of Philadelphia being ahead of you in the table, being in the last spot there. And if they win, they create a 6-point separation between you and them with 3 games left. That's 9 points potential. Now, yes, somebody else could fall behind Philadelphia, and that's what you're going to have to end up rooting for if that's the case. And this Eastern Conference race is very complicated. I talked to friend of the show, Glenn Davis from Houston Dynamo Radio earlier today about the Eastern Conference. And I think if you look at it on paper and you're not in it, like all of us on this side of the country following these teams, you might see the point totals and be like, the East isn't very good this year. The East is beating itself up. The East is a street fight between all of these teams trying to get into the postseason. And they all play one another down the stretch. Atlanta's in Philly. Philly played DC and beat them 4-0 on Sunday. Philly beat New York City 5-1 before that on Wednesday. So back-to-back games where Philadelphia scored 9 goals in 2 of them. And that's not what you want to see on Sunday. But Atlanta plays Montreal after that. Montreal is in the race. Nashville has started to make a run. The Eastern Conference is just absolute chaos at this point. And Atlanta's in the thick of it. The result against the Red Bulls, I don't want to say it doesn't really do anything either way, but no matter what, this Philadelphia game was going to be bigger because of the matchups and because of the way it plays out after this. So just to reset the playoff picture for you, 1-7, forget about them right now. New York City's in 7th on 41 points. Charlotte's on 41 points in 6th. They're 5 points clear of the play-in game. So leave them to the side for now with 4 games, 3 games left, depending on the team. Toronto only has 3. They're on 36 points. They only have 3 games left. So they're one to keep an eye on. They're level on points with Philadelphia, but everybody behind them, with the exception of Chicago, has 4 games left. Toronto only has 3. So Toronto, because they've won 2 more games than Philadelphia, and that wins is the first tiebreaker, and that could come into play if it becomes a race between Toronto and Atlanta, because Toronto will likely have more points, will have more wins if they have the same number of points the rest of the way. So it's Toronto and Philadelphia both on 36 in the last 2 playoff spots. Right now, Philadelphia would go to Toronto in the play-in game. Montreal 2 points behind that, Atlanta 3 points behind that, Nashville 3 points behind that, DC 3 points behind that, all of them with 8 wins, 13 losses, and 9 draws. Atlanta has a much better goal differential than Nashville and DC, and that would be the next tiebreaker after wins. Montreal with 1 more point, they have the same number of wins as Atlanta, and they have a much worse goal differential. Atlanta and Philadelphia, Philly has a much better goal differential. Toronto would have the goal, the not the goal differential tiebreak, but the wins tiebreak. So that presents the picture that is real for Atlanta going into Philadelphia. You got to win. It's not a must win in terms of being eliminated if you don't win, but it's a must win in a lot of different ways because you don't want to get into a tiebreak with Philly and you don't want to get into a tiebreak with Toronto and you're running out of games after this. So this is the biggest game of the 2024 season. out at training today. You already heard from Derek Williams. Let's hear from Steon Gregerson first about Philadelphia and what this match could be like. Here's Steon Gregerson from Marietta earlier today.
Yeah, of course, we have to be ready from the first minute. And, of course, to the referee whistle, we have to be ready, physical and mental. It's going to be a very tough game, and we have to give everything.
Madison Cruz asked the question of Steon Gregerson. She also asked a similar question to Derek Williams about how you deal with a Philly team that, look, is going to be physical, is going to be a pain at times to play, is going to make you suffer at times, and is going to try to provoke you. Here's Derek Williams about the Philadelphia match this weekend.
I think it's having that composure. So I think first half is something that we lacked. We're winning the battles, but it's just after the battles, you have to have that 1 or 2 second composure on the ball to relax and pick out the passes. That's something I think that we didn't do first half against Red Bull. I think second half we did. So hopefully Philadelphia, we win the first seconds and then just have that composure to get your head up and be composed to find the first pass. Because a lot of times when you can do that against high-pressure teams, that's when you can get through them.
All right. Thanks,
Derek. Thank you.
That was Derek Williams wrapping up his media availability from earlier today. And I totally agree with what he said at the end of that. This is a team where, and we've seen it with Philadelphia over the years, we've seen it with the Red Bulls as well, but Philadelphia even more so. If you can have your composure on the ball and play through that Philadelphia pressure, they kind of fold. It's back to messages, right? Where you're able to not be afraid of a team stepping up and pressing you and sending bodies and playing you man-to-man and making it difficult for you. If you say, okay, that's fine, I'm going to pass around you and we're going to eliminate you and you're going to be behind the ball trying to catch up and we're going to be breaking the other direction. What happens? What's the message to the opponent? Oh, wait, we can't press as intensely. We might get beaten. We need to drop off. What does that do? That creates more space for you on the ball. What should that end up doing? Allowing you to create opportunities and get into the attacking third and get into dangerous spots. You have to be brave. And I think on the ball, you have to be brave. You have to be composed. You have to be composed off the ball, dealing with some of the nonsense that we've seen over the years from the Philadelphia Union. You know, I talk about the Philadelphia Union a lot because I'm not necessarily a fan of their style of play. I like teams that want the ball. Philadelphia is a team that is not based on having the ball. I think at times they've shown a good ability with it, but they've made the decision that they would rather risk having less of the ball than making mistakes with it. I'm not a fan of that particular prescription for victory. Can it work? Absolutely it can. Philadelphia has been very, very good under Jim Curtin. They were seconds away from winning MLS Cup. They won a supporter shield, but it was in the 2020 year where no one played a similar kind of schedule and it was all over the place. And yeah, I think that is not even like a nice dinner plate supporter shield. That might be the plastic variety, but Philadelphia can be good at what they do and they can be effective with it. It's some of the extra that is very frustrating that you have to deal with in a Union match. Luckily, MLS changed the rules in terms of being able to roll around before a substitution. This was a classic Philadelphia move. Whenever a player was going to be subbed out, they immediately somehow were injured. And Damian Lowe did this all the time. Corey Burke, who went from Philadelphia to the Red Bulls, which is funny in and of itself, that he was a king at that. I remember the CONCACAF Champions League game where Philadelphia came into the bends and ended up winning after the best half under Gabriel Heinze's tenure, but Atlanta couldn't score. Philadelphia ends up scoring 3 in the second half. And the time wasting and the ridiculousness and the silliness. And look, it's a real thing. It's gamesmanship. You get a lead, you're kind of empowered to do that. It's down to the referee and how they manage it. I think at times Philadelphia has crossed the line with it. I think at times they have, I think, been disrespectful to the game with it. But have they been successful with it? Yes. Can it get under team skin? Yes. Atlanta can't allow that to happen in this match. They can't allow themselves to be bullied. And that being bullied in the soccer match is not purely from a physical standpoint. It can be from those other things. Atlanta can't allow Philadelphia to control the way the match is played. So one way you do that is not allowing Philadelphia to get the first goal, because if they do, those things come into play far more than if it's a 50-50 game, it's a scoreless game, or Atlanta gets the first goal and then Philadelphia's got to go chase it. It's a Philly team that scored 9 goals in their last 2. They're in maybe the best form they've been in all season. Andre Blake is back from injury. This is a very good Philadelphia team. It will be a big challenge for Atlanta United. One thing on the rumor mill to talk about quickly when it comes to Atlanta United, and we're not going to spend a ton of time on this because it is a rumor at this point. It was reported by Tom Bogert that Patrick Vieira is in the running for the Atlanta United manager job. I'm not sure if Bogert used the phrasing about him being a finalist or being the preferred candidate or any of that. I don't think it's to that stage. I might be wrong, but I haven't gotten that sense from anything that I've heard locally. Vieira has been mentioned as a candidate before. If you're not familiar with Patrick Vieira, this is a man who had 107 caps for the French national team, almost 300 appearances for Arsenal in the Premier League. He won titles in Italy, won titles in England. He ended his career with Manchester City, and he's been a manager since his career ended. He started at Manchester City with City Football Group, moved on to New York City FC, 2016 to 2018 there, has managed with 2 different clubs in France, Nice and Strasbourg, and also in England with Crystal Palace. He hasn't stayed in a lot of those spots as a manager for long periods of time. That doesn't mean that he can't be successful here if he makes the move to Atlanta. It also doesn't mean because of his playing career that he would be successful if he makes the move to Atlanta. I think there's still a good bit of unknown on how Patrick Vieira will fare as a manager long term with New York City. And that would be the most direct comparison. Although MLS 2016 to midway through 2018 is a very different league than it is today. With New York City, 90 games, 40 wins, 28 losses, 22 draws. Very good. With very good New York City teams. Did not win trophies, but very good over a 2.5-year spell. Was average with Nice, 35 wins, 32 losses in 89 games. At Crystal Palace, 22 wins, 27 losses. It's Crystal Palace, so take that with a grain of salt. Strasbourg, again, kind of average in the 2023-2024 season. 14 wins, 15 losses in 39 games in all competitions, 10 draws. Would be very interesting to see Patrick Vieira in Atlanta. Stay tuned. The managerial search will continue. Garth Lagerwey told you on our Five Stripes countdown recently that Rob Valentino has formally interviewed for that position. He is the interim manager for now. It sounds like Patrick Vieira has either interviewed or has been talked to or is desired to be talked to by Atlanta United. And that's really it that we've heard on the names side of things. There's an international break coming up, and that might be some time to arrange a few conversations. We will see if that is the case. Coming up next on Atlanta Soccer Tonight, you guys know how the show ends by now. It's the 3-4-3. 3 local stories, 4 headlines from around the world, and 3 things that make me smile about this game that I love so much. You will also hear in the 3-4-3 from Atlanta United 2 manager Steve Cook as he reflects back on the 2024 season. The 2s have 1 more game on Sunday in Philly against Philadelphia Union 2. They are eliminated from postseason contention, and they lost tonight to Inter Miami 2-1-0 here in Kennesaw. We'll be back to wrap up the show on the other side of this break. It's Atlanta Soccer Tonight on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
It's time to wrap up tonight's show with the 3-4-3. 3-4-3. 3 local stories, 4 headlines from around the world, and 3 things that made you smile about the game.
Atlanta Soccer Tonight is on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back. Final segment of Atlanta Soccer Tonight on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. I'm Jason Longshore, and y'all know how this show ends by now. We're a couple years in. It's time for the 3-4-3, brought to you by Ford. Visit your local Ford dealer. 3 local stories, 4 headlines from around the world, and 3 things that make me smile about this game that I love so much. We're going to do things a little bit differently on the local side because I'm here at Fifth Third Stadium in Kennesaw, the final game of the 2024 home schedule for Atlanta United 2. Let's start off the local stories with Atlanta United 2 manager Steve Cook, who talked to Madison Cruz after the match about his reflections on this 2024 season.
That you can dominate as many games as you want. You can have the ball, you can create opportunities, you can do well in wide areas. We're one of the best teams in the league in that kind of regard. But if you don't have people who can score goals, it's going to be very difficult to win games. And I think we often in this league, there's some high scoring games and that kind of thing. And obviously tonight we, you know, Kareem's our top scorer, he's suspended. So that is difficult. But I think throughout the year is really, you know, I don't know whether we've, you know, you learn about the players, you learn about them. That's what this is for. You give the young players an opportunity. You give them a chance to shine, to be themselves, to be part of a professional group and with a chance to have an opportunity to go forward. And I think that what we do learn is about them and which players can stand up. I'm going to sound like a broken record. I thought Dominic Tchonkwi was great again, and that's quite a few minutes in a row now. And that's several games now where he's been very good. And I thought the first team players that came down, Matt Edwards, Efren Morales and Nick Firmino, were a big piece of what we did tonight. So I think, you know, you continue to learn, you always reevaluate, you always look at the players and see what they're doing, and some surprise you and do exceptionally well, and then some you want a bit more from. But credit to the players, it's not a lack of effort, it's not a lack of passion from them, it's not anything like that. It's, you know, we've lost tonight because they scored one chance that they had and we couldn't score out.
Big thanks to Steve Cook. We had enjoyed talking to him throughout the Atlanta United 2 season with our coverage on the SDH Network. You'll hear more from Steve. You'll hear from Captain Javier Armas on our Twos Review podcast. That'll get posted later this evening on the SDH Network. But that leads me into the local stories that I wanted to talk about tonight in the 3-4-3. Three players from Atlanta United 2, and I could go through the entire roster and get into detail on all these guys and how they grew the season, but three that really stood out to me: Dominic Tchonkwi, who Steve Cook mentioned, an academy player at left back, not under a professional contract yet, got an opportunity in the middle of the season due to some injuries and good play with the academy, and has gotten even better every time out. He scored two goals early on, and that turned some heads. Defensively, he plays like a grown man, and he's 16 years old and not even a full professional yet. Dominic Tchonkwi is one to watch at a position that we've already seen in this academy produce George Bello, who is playing professionally in Europe, and Caleb Wiley, who is playing professionally in Europe. Dominic Tchonkwi could be the next in left back university here at Atlanta United. Number two on players who stood out to me for Atlanta United 2 this season, Javier Armas ended up becoming the captain as the year went on. Matt Edwards was the captain at the beginning of the season. He got promoted to the first team midway through, and a great season for Matt Edwards with Atlanta United 2. Armas, his first professional season out of Oregon State, originally from Spain, and he got better every game. And you saw him in preseason with the first team, and he looked the part. I think the biggest question for Armas at the next level would be pace, would be physicality. He's not the fastest. Well, didn't end up hurting a player that Javier Armas has looked up to for his entire life, and Sergio Busquets. Armas has got a lot of Busquets in him. He's very good on the ball. He's very intelligent. He manipulates space really well with his movement. Javier Armas is one to watch, potentially making that jump up to first team soccer, and I can hope to see more of him with Atlanta United 2 next season. And the third one, a player who I think at times we overlook because of his age. The Atlanta United 2 predominantly is about developing players out of the academy. It's about guys like Armas, you know, first year as a pro out of college. Kareem Tamimi was in that situation last year, first year as a pro out of college. He played in the NAIA at Georgia Gwinnett, one of the all-time leading scorers for the Grizzlies. He is one of the all-time leading scorers for Atlanta United 2. 9 goals this season has been outstanding, and his absence was felt tonight where he was suspended on yellow card accumulation. 9 goals this season. He is 28 years old. It's very difficult to see Kareem Tamimi making that jump into Major League Soccer. He is absolutely a player to watch and a goal scorer at the MLS Next Pro level. I would assume there are USL Championship teams, USL League One teams that would be very interested in Kareem Tamimi. And he's just at that point age-wise where it's a challenge for him to take minutes at this team and at this level. But he's been a consummate professional. He has been a mentor to the younger players. And don't forget about guys like Kareem Tamimi when we talk about Atlanta United 2 and how much value they bring to the overall project. That's three things on the local side. Let's get into four headlines from around the world. Number one, Twyla Kilgore. She was the U.S. Women's National Team interim coach for 9 months ahead of Emma Hayes's arrival. She has departed the U.S. soccer program to pursue other coaching opportunities. That was announced earlier today. Her tenure as the interim coach and then working with Emma Hayes as she took over, really important in the U.S. run to the gold medal at the Olympics. She did stay on as an assistant coach after Emma Hayes took over and was the perfect bridge from after the last World Cup to Emma Hayes. What Twyla Kilgore did in the CONCACAF W Gold Cup and that run of friendlies leading up to Emma Hayes taking over, those moments were so important for this team as they rebuilt their confidence and got ready for the Olympics. We'll be very interested to see what Twyla Kilgore's next move is as a manager. Number two, another manager who is leaving their current post, Bob Bradley, former U.S. men's national team coach. He's resigned from Stabæk in Norway after a year in charge. He was there previously in 2014 and 15, hired again a year ago to try to save the team from being demoted into the second division in Norway. Couldn't do that. They were already too far gone at that point. Had a great start to the season in the second division this year, but they've dropped in the standings, and it doesn't look like they're going to bounce back up to the first division immediately. They've lost 3-2 at home. They're seventh in the standings, 10 points out of the promotion spots with 7 games to go, and he agreed with the club to walk away. Stabæk said in a statement on Sunday, "Bob will forever be a special part of the club's history, a wise football head with enormous work capacity and great commitment. After a long period of limited development and varying results, we have, in consultation with Bob, agreed to end the collaboration." Does that put Bob Bradley into the discussion about potential coaching jobs in Major League Soccer? Yes, Atlanta is one spot that would be potentially open. There are others too, and it's going to be a very interesting coaching carousel in MLS, and I would assume that Bob Bradley's name is going to be on that carousel after his tenures at LAFC and Toronto somewhat recently. Number three on the headlines, injuries in Europe. Marc-Andre Ter Stegen, one of the Barcelona captains, longtime starter in goal, complete rupture of a tendon in his right knee during the team's win 5-1 at Villarreal on Sunday. Out for a long period of time. They feel pretty good about their reserve goalkeeper, but then it's a lot of younger keepers after that. We'll see if Barcelona figures out a way to make a move. Manchester City might have to make a move as well in January. Rodri, not sure about the severity of his knee injury. He has been pictured in Spain, reportedly ahead of tests on a right knee injury sustained against Arsenal in the Premier League at the weekend, a draw in that one. City hasn't talked about it, but reports in the British media that Rodri has suffered an ACL injury and is set for a long-term absence. Some good news on the injury front. Alisson of Liverpool, their goalkeeper, he is looking to return to action this weekend, according to manager Arne Slot. The Brazil international, he is coming back from a hamstring injury. He is going to miss the English League Cup third round match against West Ham tomorrow with the idea that he will be back on the weekend. Number four on the headlines, Everton. Oh, this takeover saga has been ridiculous. And it could, I say could because we've been close to this before, it could soon be over, as they have reached an agreement Monday with the Texas-based Friedkin Group over the purchase of the club. So, joint statement issued with Everton and the Friedkin Group. "We look forward to providing stability to the club and sharing our vision for its future. Everton's in 19th place out of 20 in the Premier League. They're trying to stay up. I don't know if they're going to be able to pull that off. The Friedkin Group is fronted by Dan and his son Ryan, a consortium of investments in automotive, entertainment, hospitality, and sports, which includes the Italian club Roma in its portfolio. They made a fortune distributing Toyotas in Texas." Man, that's a lot of Toyotas. They reached an agreement in principle to buy 94% stake of Everton's majority shareholder, Farhad Moshiri. Talks were called off a month later. Everton has talked to anybody who would talk to them about selling those shares. They've not gotten anywhere. They're hemorrhaging money on a monthly basis. They need to find a buyer quickly. They're leaving Goodison Park at the end of the season, moving into a brand new stadium that's close to completion. They're broke. They need money. It looks like the Friedkins are going to be the ones to provide that cash. Three things that make me smile about the game as we wrap up Atlanta soccer tonight on another Tuesday. Number one, Edwin Mosquera's goal on Saturday night. It's going to get lost in the shuffle after conceding and the team not winning the match. That would have been huge in terms of that playoff picture. Don't forget about Edwin Mosquera's goal. It's as pretty as you will see, with the right foot curling into the far side netting. An amazing goal from Edwin Mosquera. It should have been a match winner. It was not. That's not making me smile. The goal made me smile a lot. I was very, very happy. What happened after it, I was not smiling. I was not very happy. I was very angry, if you heard the broadcast on 92.9 The Game on Saturday night. Number two on things that do make me smile. When we got here at Fifth Third Stadium here in Kennesaw for the final home match of the Atlanta United 2 season, I walked in and I saw a lot of players from this team kind of taking everything in. And look, it's easy to forget that these guys who, you know, if you love this game to whatever level, don't ever lose that love of it, by the way. Don't ever allow yourself to be cynical about the game and think that these guys don't care and think that they're just doing it for the paycheck and it doesn't matter to them. All of these guys were walking around the field. So many of them walking around the field barefoot, kind of just feeling it for the last time here in Kennesaw this season. It was emotional watching it. I mean, I remember what I felt like my last home game in high school. That was the closest thing that I had to this experience where, you know, we had 1,000 fans who would come watch the games and it meant something. And you didn't want to leave the field. And you knew what coming in, it's your last game, and you didn't want to leave. It's a real feeling. And it was emotional seeing that play out tonight. Number three on things that make me smile, big meaningful games. And we got one coming up on Saturday. Atlanta United at Philadelphia Union, the biggest game of the season. Pre-game coverage starts at 6:30 on 92.9 The Game in the Odyssey app. Kickoff will be at 7:40. Mike Conte and I will be in Chester, PA. We will be yelling. We will be screaming. We will be hopefully smiling. We will be as crazy as we can possibly be because it is one of the biggest games in club history in a long time. Atlanta's got to win to have a good chance of getting into the postseason. We will bring you the story from Chester, PA on Saturday night. And then I'll be back here on 92.9 The Game with Atlanta Soccer tonight, next Tuesday, to break it all down and get you ready for two games next week at home, Wednesday versus Montreal and Saturday against the Red Bulls. Thank you for spending some time with me on a Tuesday night. Adios, everybody.